yourself real harm. When you were tried for the crime of attempted suicide in this very courtroom, you refused to enter a plea. Why have you changed your tune in this regard? This was a question that Moody and Anna had not rehearsed, and for a moment he felt anxious that she would falter. But she responded calmly and with the truth.
At that time, Mr. Staines was still missing, she said. I thought he might have gone up river or into the gorge, in which case he'd be reading the Hokitika papers for news. I didn't want to say anything that he might read and think less of me.
Broom coughed into the back of his knuckles, dryly. Please describe what happened on the evening of the 14th of January, he said, in sequence and in your own words. She nodded.
I met Mr. Staines at the Dust and Nugget around 7. We had a drink together, and then he escorted me back to his residence on Revel Street. At about 10 o'clock, I went back to the Gridiron and lit my pipe. I was feeling strange, as I've said, and I took a little more than usual. I suppose I must have left the Gridiron while I was still under, because the next thing I remember is waking up in jail.
What do you mean when you say that you are feeling strange?
Oh, she said, just that I was melancholy, and very happy, and disconsolate, all mixed up. I can't describe it exactly.
At some point that same night, Mr. Staines disappeared, Broom said. Do you know where he went?
No, Anna said. Last I saw him was at his residence on Revel Street. He was asleep. He must have disappeared sometime after I left him.
Sometime after 10 o'clock, in other words.
Yes, said Anna. I waited for him to come back, and he didn't. And the days kept passing with no sign of him. When Mrs. Wells offered me board at the Wayfarer, I thought it best to take it. Just for the meantime. Everyone was saying that he was surely dead.
Did you see Mr. Staines at any point between the 14th of January and the 20th of March?
No, sir.
Did you have any correspondence with him?
No, sir.
Where do you think he went during that period?
Anna opened her mouth to reply, and Moody, rising quickly, said, I object. The defendant cannot be forced to speculate.
Again the justice allowed the objection, and Broom was invited to continue. When Mr. Staines was recovered on the afternoon of the 20th of March, there was a bullet in his shoulder, he said. At the time of your rendezvous on the 14th of January, was Mr. Staines injured?
No, said Anna.
Did he become injured that evening?
Not that I know of, said Anna. Last I saw him, he was fine. He was sleeping.
Broom picked up a muff pistol from the barrister's desk. Do you recognise this firearm, Miss Wetherill?
Yes, said Anna, squinting at it. That's mine.
Do you carry this weapon on your person?
I used to, when I was working. I kept it in the front of my dress.
Were you carrying it on the night of the 14th of January?
No. I left it at the Gridiron, under my pillow.
But you were working on the night of the 14th of January, were you not?
I was with Mr. Staines,
Anna said. That was not my question, Broom said. Were you working on the night of the 14th of January?
Yes, Anna said.
And yet, as you allege, you left your pistol at home.
Yes.
Why?
I didn't think I'd need it, Anna said.
But this was an aberration. Ordinarily it would have been on your person.
Yes.
Can anyone vouch for the pistol's whereabouts that evening?
No, Anna said, unless someone looked under my pillow.
The cartridge found in Mr. Staines' shoulder issued from a pistol of this type, Broom said. Did you shoot him?
No.
Do you know who did?
No, sir.
Broom coughed into his knuckles again. Were you aware, upon the night of the 14th of January, of Mr. Staines' net worth as a prospector?
I knew he was rich, she said. Everyone knows that.
Did you discuss the fortune discovered in the cottage of Mr. Crosby Wells with Mr. Staines, either on that night or on any other night?
No, we never spoke about money.
Never, said Broome, raising an eyebrow. Mr. Broome, said the justice tiredly.
Broome inclined his head.
When did you first learn about Mr. Staines' intentions as described upon this deed of gift?
On the morning of the 20th of March, said Anna.
She relaxed a little. This was a line she had memorized.
The jailhouse chaplain brought that paper to the wayfarer's fortune to show me, and I took it straight to the courthouse to find out what it might mean. I sat down with Mr. Fellows, and he confirmed that the deed of gift was a legal document and binding. He said that there might be something in it, that I might have a claim upon the fortune, I mean. Then he agreed to take the deed to the bank on my behalf.
What happened after that?
He said to meet back here at the courthouse at 5 o'clock. So I came back at 5, and we sat down as before. But then I fainted.
What induced the faint?
I don't know.
Were you under the effects of any drug or spirit at that time?
No, said Anna. I was stone cold sober.
Can anyone vouch for your sobriety that day?
The Reverend Devlin was with me in the morning, Anna said, and had spent that afternoon with Mr. Clinch at the Gridiron.
In his report to the magistrate, Governor Shepherd described a strong smell of laudanum in the air at the time of your faint, Broome said.
Maybe he made a mistake, Anna said.
You have a dependency upon opiates, do you not?
I haven't smoked a pipe since before I moved in with Mrs. Wells, said Anna stoutly. I gave it up when I went into mourning, the day I was released from jail.
Allow me to clarify. You attest that you have not touched opium in any form since your overdose upon the 14th of January.
Yes, said Anna. That's right.
And Mrs. Carver can vouch for this.
Yes.
Can you tell the court what happened on the afternoon of the 27th of January, in the hours before Mrs. Carver's arrival at